Here we go. Okay, thank you. Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the City Council meeting, the regular business meeting for July 12th of 2016. The time right now is 7:05 p.m. Ms. Smith, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cutaback, Hanford, Rasmussen, and Davis.
Thank you. And I did receive a message this evening from Councilmember Camp. He is out ill. And also from Councilmember Gamble, there was something going on at work and he's not certain that he'll be able to make it back in time for the council meeting. So without objection, I'd like to consider both of them as excused absences. Okay, seeing none, let's go ahead and move on to the Pledge of Allegiance. Councilmember Davis.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And I'm pleased to announce that for our first announcements and presentations that we have Representative Dan Christensen here this evening. Representative Christensen.
This thing doesn't go high. It'll be in our next capital budget request.
Can you hear me okay? Yes, sir.
Well, thank you so much for having me here this evening. I was asked to come by and kind of give you a quick update as to what's been going on the last year down in the legislature. I did want to make available, I'd like to make sure that Elizabeth is going to now be responsible for that. I've got some handouts there for folks. One of the things that is very, one of the things that Washington State's been able to do very effectively is we have the most efficient and technologically advanced communication system between citizens and the legislature in the United States. Might have to do with a little computer company down in the Redmond area. They have made it very simple for us to communicate with our constituents. And so I want to make sure that you have copies of our Get Connected pieces, not only for the council and the mayor, but anybody who's interested that's in attendance tonight. You know, we had several challenges. Let's remind people that this last year was a supplemental budget year. It was not our big budget year. And so, you know, as you may recall, in 2015, we spent a little bit of extra time down Olympia. We were supposed to get out in April. We didn't get out to the middle of July. By my calendar, I was still there this time last year. So we went into extra innings. That being said, at the end of the day, we ended up with the strongest bipartisan legislative vote in more than half a century. We were done, meaning that we had, I think in the House of Representatives, we had a record low, only 11 no votes on the budget. It was probably, well, it was more than half a century, the most bipartisan effort that I'd ever seen. Actually, in my lifetime, it was the strongest vote in my lifetime. With that, it's not that it was perfect. There is no such thing as a perfect budget, as you all know. Anybody ever voted no on a budget before? Maybe a couple of you. Had some amendments. Well, so do we. But I think we did some great things. And there were some strong capital budget efforts, transportation budget efforts that were made into our area as well. We, as the council knows, we had some meetings down in Olympia this last year related to Highway 522. And I know the mayor and I have had numerous conversations about that, and I want to thank you all for the effort you've been doing this last year when it comes to the networking of both private and public partnerships and seeing what we can do to help solve the, I call it the hourglass highway, the choke points that we have along Highway 522, that due to the fact that there was not some follow-through, there was no follow-through from the county on their responsibility with respect to fixing that portion of it or finishing it, now everybody's leaning on the state to try and fix that problem. We do have some dollars that have been made available to get on a faster track than we've been. As you know, there's about $300,000 in change that'll go into the engineering efforts to try and speed up the process. And it was made a priority. We were able to pass that through the supplemental transportation budget this year to make sure that happens. That being said, there is, you know, and let me clarify that. There's still a little bit of work to be done on that as we go into next session, but it's going to happen. When it comes to capital budget requests, you know, we were not able to get the Ty Park fields done, the synthetic request, you know, for the field there. There was only $16 million left in the budget capacity for the entire state. This again was a supplemental budget year. That being said, in 2015, it was a record capital budget year. As a matter of fact, the 39th district where we're located here, we received record dollars into the 39th district for various requests we had in our cities all across the 39th district. And so we were very proud of a lot of the efforts that took place there. 522 will continue to be going into 2017 probably the number one transportation focus that we have. Not only are we going to have to work with our county and the city and the partnerships we've got here, but with the state to see if we can get some dollars into that to try and fast track it. I would say that it's probably unlikely that you're going to see funding for the project in itself in its entirety this coming session. On the other hand, what we are seeing is we have flexible funds within the transportation budget. And what we're going to try and do is see if we can earmark some of those flexible funds. And what I mean by flexible funds, it's money that's left over from projects that may have come in under budget, go into a separate portion of the transportation budget. And we're going to try and see if we can work some of those dollars into Highway 522 to try and pick off portions of that project. You know, as we all know, the stretch of highway that we just finished here recently took almost 30 years to happen. We're not going to do that. And so I've got my colleagues that I'm working with on both sides of the House and the Senate, and so we're focusing our efforts pretty strongly there. That being said, there's still going to need to be a strong partnership, especially with Snohomish County, to help with these efforts and the citizens and the network that you've all been able to put together with the local businesses and the public sector as well. Public safety. Marijuana and liquor. It's going to be something that we battle and are going to be amending and changing the rules and regulations on for, I would say, years and years and years to come. Liquor, for example, has been something ever since the end of Prohibition. Somewhere in this country, most of the places in this country, they've been adjusting state and local municipalities' laws and rules to deal with just liquor laws ever since the end of Prohibition. And I would guess, based on what's happening with marijuana and the fact that the federal government still is not, you know, they're not seeing where some states are at on this, the fact that the Department of Defense has a zero tolerance policy on marijuana. So if you've got the chemical in your system, which, by the way, is in your system for about 30 days as compared to alcohol, which is about 48 to 72 hours, you're going to see a big problem. It was interesting. I was with the Admiral here in Everett for the Navy, and the USS Stennis is an aircraft carrier. It's one of our 11 carriers that we have. The problem that the Department of Defense has is huge, especially with marijuana. Because of their zero tolerance that they have, the USS Stennis alone, when it's in port, they average 40 sailors a week dishonorably discharged from that one vessel when they're in port just because of marijuana. That's one ship. And granted, it's a big ship. Okay, when I was out there, I was up to sea with them actually doing war games with them a few years ago. There were 7,000 sailors on board with the air wings that we had, actually most of them from the Anacortes area, Whidbey Island area. And so it's a huge problem, and we're going to continue to be dealing with that. We've, though, stood very strong when we had opposition to we wanted to make sure there was money going to the local level, because the law enforcement aspect of this, dealing with the problem, is the reality that us as municipalities have to deal with. 2 years ago, there was no effort to get any money into the local governments, and so the bill did not pass. The version of the bill that passed out of the Senate, they said there was a local component to it. There was not. And we had to prove to the Senate there wasn't. And so the bill ended up dying in the House. This last year, we were able to pass some legislation that did help some, but it's going to be an effort that we have to continue to work on to make sure that if we're going to have these types of things legalized, that we're providing the resources then to deal with the negative aspect of it. And so I'd be happy to work with all of you, because that's going to be a work in progress from here on out. It's interesting just for you all to know, for nearly 10 years, the legislature in Washington State stopped the legalization of marijuana. We as legislators debated for 10 years, basically the initiative that passed. And what I found ironic was several of those years, the prime sponsors of the bills, after we've dug into the details of the challenges and problems we were going to have, decided to vote against their own bill because they didn't realize what kind of Pandora's box was going to be opened up and how local governments, the taxes, and all the problems that we have, and we're currently seeing, if you even talk to our hospitals, which I'm meeting with them tomorrow and the next day, how the emergency room visits have jumped up in some cases up to 60% just related specifically to marijuana. And so there are some problems out there. It is what it is right now. It's a citizens' initiative. We're going to have to deal with it. But I see it as a moving target that we're going to have to adjust as we move forward. But my commitment and what I've been pushing the legislature is, if this is going to be legal, we need to make sure that we're getting the resources into the communities that need to deal with the realities of the challenge there. Locally, the frontage road, I think it's number 7, the chain link hookup has been a priority. I know we've talked about this, Mr. Mayor, and others, and we're going to continue to try and do some things there. There's some creative funding opportunities that we're going to be looking at there, and going back to even the Highway 522 project with some of the federal resources, we need to have some further conversation related to the applications to deal with it. I think they call it the Tiger Grants, as I recall, back in D.C. I don't think we're done with some of those opportunities yet, so I want to make sure that the partnership between the state, the local municipalities, and the county is really something that we can come to terms with and be a be a united front on providing resources for some of these projects. Affordable housing. Ironically, today I was with Shannon Affolter, who is the executive director of the Snohomish County Master Builders Association. We were in Mill Creek speaking to the Greater Snohomish County Business Alliance, and that was the subject matter of today. It's expected that we're going to see 5 million more people in this state by 2040. Because of what's going on with the economy, and put that in perspective, we currently have 7 million people. That's a big jump. We are only producing houses and housing at a rate of meeting about 60 to 70% of what the need is right now. That's one of the reasons why we're seeing artificially inflated prices in housing. The average house today in King County is in the mid $600,000 range. The average price in Snohomish County today is in the mid $500,000 range. Great for the seller, but you got to move somewhere. I've got somebody who just moved in next door to me here just 2 weeks ago. Works at Amazon in downtown Seattle. And is going to commute from here to downtown Seattle. But they're actually originally from Monroe. They wanted the lifestyle of Monroe. They're moving from Ballard to here. And they just said, we wanted a place for our kids. They got several little kids. They love the lifestyle out here, and they wanted to return to it. Plus, it was one of the only places they could afford to live. And I know they paid a lot for that house just because of the artificial inflation. We've got to take a look at and relook at this at a state level, the Growth Management Act. What's happening is we are so restricted on the properties that are available to develop. It's a choking point for us. And so what it's doing is it's driving up housing prices because we don't have the buildable lands. I think that the Growth Management Act in itself has served us well. That being said, I think it needs to be amended to accommodate the boundaries. Back when 20 years ago or so they came up with it, our population has almost doubled since it was originally put in place. And so the boundaries need to be looked at and adjusted, just like anything else we do. And so I think that's going to be an effort you're going to be seeing here over the next year or two, is how do we deal with that? But I think one of the bigger challenges we're dealing with, even besides that, is a lot of the environmental challenges we're dealing with in Washington State. For example, when it comes to environmental mitigation that we pay as a state just on transportation dollars, we're paying at least double in environmental mitigation of every other state in the United States. At least double. Compared to a few states, we're paying up to 10 times as much as at least a few states in this country. But to have the closest state to us being at least double what they're paying environmental mitigation is something that we have to take into consideration if we're going to be able to build infrastructure that's affordable in the state of Washington. And so the environmental laws that we have put in place, both at a state level, federal level, and even at the local level, are something that if we're going to get in front of some of the housing challenges we have, the affordable housing challenges we have. Today in Snohomish County, 25% of the building of a house is related to environmental mitigation. Do the math. If you're buying a $400,000 house, that's $100,000 just in environmental costs and impact costs. And you're banking it. You're taking out your 20, 30-year mortgage to pay for that. And that's not even an assessment. I mean, that's added. You're being taxed on it, of course, because it's part of the assessed value. But it's an artificial inflation and cost to the realities of what our housing is. And we really need to be considering that. because whether it's stormwater issues or name the issue, the costs have become so prohibitive in providing affordable housing that it's actually worsening our homelessness problem. Because even in our homelessness, where we're building, for example, the Housing Hope projects and things like that, it is so dramatically driven up the cost of even building low-income housing that it's become unaffordable, cost prohibitive for us to do it in a way that makes sense and that the taxpayer can actually afford to do.
US 2 bypass is always going to be something out there that we're looking at. I do believe, though, related to that bypass, that we need to take a look at. I've talked to the engineers from DOT on this phase one. It's way overpriced for what they want to do. As a matter of fact, the price in the last bid for the phase one of the Monroe bypass is almost three-fourths the cost of what we just did between Monroe and the Snohomish River on 522. That's outlandish. Expensive, considering we blasted away Lord's Hill for how many months, if not a year. We built five bridges, put in a divided freeway, and we did that for $72 million, and they want about $45 million to put in a couple ramps and a roundabout down the street. That's just outlandishly expensive, and so we are going to be working with the department to make sure that we're getting far more reasonable assessments and bids on the realities of the cost of those. And that's one of the reasons why that project has had a very difficult time moving forward, because it is so overpriced to compare to any comparison project in the state. It makes no sense at all.
Another one that's big that I think that we're going to need to communicate with, and I was with yesterday. I was with the Association of Washington Cities representative. Is the public records request issue. While the Freedom of Information Act is something that I believe in, when the act was put in place, the internet didn't exist, texting didn't exist, the computers were, you know, the size of this room, at least the hard drive systems were, and now with the electronic age, what's happened is, as many of you know, and you're seeing it even right here, and I know we're seeing it in our police departments, we're seeing it in our fire departments, we're seeing it in all of our agencies, when somebody makes a request, the amount of information that is required under the act to be made accessible to the public has become cost prohibitive. It's actually in some cities around the state, it's wiping out their entire budgets just to deal with the Public Records Request Act. We have several cities in the state of Washington that have their budgets are in the few hundred thousand dollars or less. And we have several of them that are spending three-fourths to all of their budget just on Public Records Request Act. They're not able to do the public safety stuff. They're not able to run their offices. They can't pay the utility bills because every penny is going into just public records requests. And we've got to get reasonable about how that's going to look. So during the interim, we've actually had a group of individuals working on that. There is some new information, actually new systems and applications that are out there. There's companies that have studied this nationally because it's a national problem that we're dealing with where it's become unreasonably expensive to just provide, you know, information. That new data systems are now being built for municipalities, state agencies, federal agencies. Matter of fact, the state of Washington, many of their agencies are now customers of some of these data companies. And the whole idea behind it is, as information is being made available to a municipality, to a government entity, whatever type it is, the data is being entered into a system that is publicly accessible. And so we're trying to see if there's a way to partner with cities, with counties, with the state government to have databases built so that the public has access to that information without having to have cities individually hire employees and auditors to go in and go through thousands and thousands of documents to try and figure out, is this the email that would pertain to that request? Because literally tens of thousands of hours are being spent every year in state government just fulfilling those requests. And what's ironic is most of the information they go through is not information that they even are able to pass on. It's not part of that. Again, remembering that when the act was put in place, we were still using IBM Selectric typewriters and colored paper. Does everybody even know what current paper is? Even don't know what that is? But the technology has changed that, and so it's a huge problem that's going to have to be dealt with. And so we're going to be working to make sure that while the act and the intent of the Freedom of Information Act is upheld, that there are cost-saving ways of having our municipalities and our other government entities be able to provide that information to the public. With that, I could talk for hours and hours, but what I'd like to do is open up for any specific questions you all have.
Thank you very much. Council, any questions, comments? Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you for coming tonight. We really appreciate the update. At the end of the session, there seemed to be a lot of discussion and information being shared about the transgender use of bathrooms, and that seemed to be an issue that's probably going to be talked about again in Olympia next session. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was an interesting, you know, when you run for office, there are certain subjects you don't think you're ever going to have to deal with. This was the bathroom conversation I never thought I was going to have to deal with, but that's the reality where we're at today. I think that the focus from my perspective is going to be on safety, first and foremost. As you may or may not know, there actually was a hearing over in Yakima area, on a public hearing on this issue, taken up by the JARC committee. The JARC committee is the joint, I'll get this wrong, but I'm going to try. The acronym stands for the Joint Agency Audit Review Committee. And what that committee does, and I used to sit on it many years ago, it takes into consideration whether or not the agency that is moving forward to the public with a rule is living within the legislative intent of the law. And it was in the they actually took up the case, they reviewed it, and the vote was split. Half voted yes, half voted no, which leaves in play what we have in current rule of the Human Rights Commission is still in play. It's something that I believe will probably be, there's going to be motions, I'm sure, in the up and coming session to deal with it. We're already hearing from municipalities, from businesses of all types, from virtually anybody who's got a public restroom, health clubs, gas stations, because one of the things that was not taken into consideration when the rule was moved forward, and it's actually required under the law, is an economic impact statement. There was never an economic impact statement done on the ruling, yet the ruling was mandating that in every school, in every business, every public business, every public place, that you had to provide, you know, changes, capital improvements in your bathroom facilities to accommodate this rule. And that was never taken into consideration. And so it's, you know, they're racking up the dollars here as to the estimates as to how much it's going to cost. And depending on how far they go, it's anywhere from tens of millions to hundreds of millions of dollars just in the state of Washington to comply. And so there's going to be, I would say, from very different angles and perspectives on this, there's going to be movements as to how to properly deal with this. My biggest concern, frankly, is for the safety of every single citizen involved, whether it be a transgender person or not. Making sure that we're providing safe places for those people to be is going to be my number one focus. And how we do that best, that's something that has never been debated in the legislature. In the Senate, they touched on it a little bit, and the motion failed. In the House, we were never allowed by the chair of the committee to even have a public hearing. The chair of the committee would not allow any bill related to the subject matter to ever have a public minute, period. And that was unfortunate, because I believe that if we're going to continue to be a democracy, if we're going to be a legislative body, a citizens' legislature, that any and all subjects like that should at least have their time in the public limelight. That has never happened in the House of Representatives. And so I think there's going to be a motion, a strong motion, to make sure that happens this year so that we can deal with the safety aspect of it for sure.
Any discussion, or do you think gun control or guidelines around gun ownership are going to be an issue? I heard on the news, I don't know if I heard it correctly, but is there something happening down there this summer?
Every year there is.
Well, where that, yeah, the Democrats were sitting in the
Well, every year since I've been in the legislature, there have been gun bills related predominantly to the restrictions of access to guns that have been brought up. I'm going to tell you my personal story on this. I have a family member who was murdered by somebody several years ago, and some of you know this, but I have a family member who was murdered execution style by somebody who illegally, let's back up, the system worked. The state didn't allow this person to obtain a gun. So it worked. So instead, the person broke into a home, broke into a gun safe, went over to my family member's home, put him on his knees, and put a bullet in the back of his head. That person was under, and the person served 7 years, was up for parole, was kept in for a total of 9 years, and is out on the streets today.
It was, as a family, it was wrenching. And so as somebody who's experienced the pain of gun violence personally, I have a litmus test, a very strong litmus test. My litmus test is this. Would this proposal have saved my Uncle Ken's life? That's my litmus test. At the end of the day, every single proposal I've ever seen never would have saved my own uncle's life. It never would have saved the lives of the hundreds, if not thousands, of people we've seen dealing with gun violence issues today. That's the part that frustrates me, because we know, based on FBI resources and law enforcement resources, we already know who 90%+ of these repeat offenders are related to gun violence. But what we have not done is we have not, in many cases, prosecuted, and or we also have a mental illness problem, and we have not taken care of that problem properly. And so our focus is going to be on, look, we know who most of these offenders already are. Let's make sure that we're taking care of them first, because until we take care of the people we know are the problem, are we going to restrict innocent citizens from being able to protect themselves from people that we know are a problem? And we just have not done that, because in my situation, this person broke numerous laws before they ever put their finger on the trigger, held the gun to my uncle's head, and pulled it. It wasn't the laws. They could have broken, they broke numerous laws. And that's what we see time and time and time again. And when you talk to people that are actually the offenders of gun laws, they laugh at the laws. And I've had these conversations. Go down, by the way, and I'm sure the chief can back me up on this, because I've visited our prison. I've talked to people who've been convicted of violent gun crimes. Many of us have. They're like, we broke all kinds of laws before we ever used the gun. And so how are we going to look at this? Are we going to only be looking out for the criminal and making it sound good? Most criminals I know that are in the prison down the street, they broke several laws to get in the place. Or are we going to be looking out for the protection of our citizens? As somebody who swore an oath to the citizens of the state of Washington to uphold the Constitution, if you read the Constitution, which interestingly enough most people have not, it actually talks about protecting the citizens. And so I will do everything I can to make sure our citizens are protected, not only from the people that we know are criminals that should be locked up, but also from those we don't know that are set on evil intent. And that's the other issue we're dealing with, is we have people that are set on evil intent that are willing to break all kinds of laws before they ever put you in harm's way. And so you may know where my bend is a little bit on that issue, but I am a strong supporter of the Second Amendment and being able to defend yourself. I think that it's a great equalizer against people set on evil intent, having experienced it first.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Any other questions or comments, Council? Councilmember Hanford.
On that sober subject,
yeah.
We're going to end.
You can count on me.
I just want to thank you for coming tonight. I always appreciate hearing your updates and appreciate what you do.
You're welcome.
Kevin's a nice one.
Oh, Patsy, I think I've known you longer than anyone here.
I echo the same.
Okay.
What else? Representative Christensen. I greatly appreciate having had time with you last fall when the issue of 522 was brought to my attention from the Highway 2 Safety Coalition. I reached out to you. You came and you met with me for some time. It was because of your advice that we were able to kind of continue down the rabbit hole that ultimately brought multiple agencies and different legislative districts into this room on January 7th. When we went down as a group back in February or so, I truly appreciate that. I think we had a half hour to 45 minutes with you. And I, as a mayor for our community, I, as a citizen that you represent, truly appreciate the work that you've done for our community and that you continue to do. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. And I want to apologize. I know the mayor knows this, but I couldn't be here on January 7th for that meeting because I was already in Olympia.
Yep, nope, I knew you let me know that, and I was fully aware of that. And again, thank you so much for your service.
If there's no more questions, just a quick remark that I may make, if that's okay.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayor. I want to thank you too. You know, it's
You know, we have, in my district, we have 14 cities that overlap in and out of the 39th district. So I've got 14 councils, three counties. Thankfully, they took Whatcom County away, so I don't have to deal with those guys anymore. Love Whatcom County, but it's a lot of people to keep track of. And the issues from municipality to municipality can be dramatically different. And I want to thank you all for taking, investing in sending some folks on a more regular basis. You're the largest city we have in the district, the metropolis of Monroe. And then I think it's Cedar, Woolley, and Arlington are close second and third. But you, by sending some folks down to Olympia to represent you on your behalf, actually does make a huge difference for us. We are faced with, from year to year, sometimes several thousand bills come before us every year. And it's virtually impossible for us not only to read every bill, believe it or not, but to keep track of the ones that are going to impact every community that we have. And having some folks down there that you've decided has been a priority to this city to send down there and really be looking out specifically to the interests of the city actually does make a difference. And I want to thank you for that. Because, you know, they're visiting me in my office. They're giving me updates. If they see amendments that are looking bad, you know, we're trying to keep track of so many issues down there, it's virtually impossible to track it. And so I count on those that are on the front lines or on the receiving end of whatever issue, whatever bill or amendment is going to, you know, going to be moved forward on. Having people that are laser-like focused on that makes all the difference in the world to us. So I want to thank you for your efforts there. I think, from my perspective anyway, it's been a good thing. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Next item that we have on our agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. Public testimony is, public comment is limited to 3 minutes per speaker, and Ms. Spook has a sign-up sheet. Thank you. Okay. All right, the first person that we have who has signed up to speak is Paul and Christina Barker.
Good evening. We do our name and address, is right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes, please. Okay. Your name and address. It's not. It's not per se required, but we do appreciate it.
Oh, okay. Christina and Paul Barker. We are here for our business jump rattle and roll. Business address is 17631 147th Street Southeast. We're in Suite 5 and 6 here in Monroe. We are here tonight to continue our discussion regarding the emission tax code 5.03. Our hope tonight is to be able to provide you guys with some viable options for a potential change to the code and to continue to work together as we have to come up with a solution that hopefully will work for us all. There is some new amendment options we see on the council agenda for tonight, and as business owners, option 3 or 4 would work best for us. You know, it allows us to continue to grow as a business and not have to necessarily work within a threshold limit. I understand if that's the route that needs to be taken as well, and we're prepared, you know, with some numbers for that if that's the way that council would like to go also. Should I give those numbers now, or?
If you'd like, go ahead.
Okay. So these numbers are high as far as what we're currently collecting, but again, it just gives us so that we don't have to worry about growing and advertising and gaining new customers. We would be looking at amendment option 1 would be to exempt a small business that charges admissions that has an annual revenue from such events of $200,000 or less, or a total gross revenue of all sales for $450,000 or less. The open play and the admissions are only about a third of our income. So if we put everything together, parties, private events, concessions sold, that's where that 450 number would come in. And again, it's high in comparison to what our reality is today. but we don't want us feeling out and not be able to grow either. Amendment option two would be to, we go to number three here on our list, would be to do a combination of a new classification type for our business combined with a revenue. And so an example of that would be to exempt a youth facility, a fitness facility, with a gross revenue of either the $200,000 or the $450,000. To create a new classification, we saw some recommendations here on the amendment option three, which would be a family fun center, an indoor play area, indoor recreation center. Those are all great, sufficient to what we do. We do also really classify our own selves as exercise and fitness for families. So, a couple of things we came up with would be a youth fitness and recreational center, a recreational sports club, a youth exercise facility. So those are also some different ideas.
You get a lot of families that come in to jump around and roll that homeschool and need
solely as PE. Yeah.
So it's, I dare any one of us to go up and down our 20-foot slide 5 times. It's a workout.
Yeah.
It really is. In closing, we just like to, we had all this stuff prepared, but closing, we'd just like to say that we appreciate the time and the energy the council, mayor, and city employees have all put into this matter. We have found you all to be very approachable and willing to listen. We truly, truly love being a part of this community and look forward to a solution that will allow us to keep Jump Around Roll here for many, many more years of healthy family fun and priceless childhood memories.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks next for coming multiple times.
Four.
And the next, next person who signed up to speak is Chris Waltman. Mr. Waltman, welcome.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I'm humbled because I need to ask for help. Letting you know, I've been involved with nonprofit work, my family and I, for the last 20 years or so, and with that heart and intent, recently my wife and I purchased a property. It's actually a property you probably have all seen. It's on Highway 2. It's right across from Calhoun from the Reptile Zoo. At one point, I understand this was the pride of the community. It was called some White Swan Ranch, and it was a beautiful place, but if you recall seeing it recently, it's a junkyard and in disrepair. We bought this thing on a very unique situation on a shoestring because of our heart intent to make it something that can be useful for the community. Well, part of that farm is a residence that served with city water, and it developed a leak and it accumulated a bill of $3,600. And so I understand that the city has a provision to cut that in half, but $1,800 is backbreaking in our situation. And I don't know what situations can come arise from this, but I'm here because we do need help, and I don't know what else to do. So is there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Waltman. Gene, are you familiar with this?
This is the first time I've heard of it, but what was described is accurate. If the customer brings a copy of the repair bill, it is allowed within our code to cut the cost of the water in half for that customer.
My understanding of this is the typical situation. They've seen commercial bills up to $1,000 and residential like $100, but even at $1,800, it's obviously a unique situation. And I guess I'm not asking for fair because evidence of the water was used in the ground because there's no detection that you can see water anywhere. So I guess I'm looking more for grace and mercy than I am for fairness because I don't know what to do about that.
So what we can do is this, since this is the first that Mr. Brazo, our city administrator, is hearing about it, and Diane Nelson isn't here. She's our finance director. Jean will take a look into that. Now, please note that Diane is on vacation this week, so I would anticipate that staff will get back in touch with you a week from tomorrow. That gives her a couple days to get back to work from vacation. Jean will be in contact with you maybe tomorrow to follow up with any questions that you have, and then we'll come back and report to council. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Councilmember Scarborough. I didn't realize that you were
watching, Chris.
Sorry, Mr. Waltman, we normally, I didn't see the lights, so.
The property is east of the Reptile Zoo.
west, so it's across Calhoun, so it's on the same side of, as Highway 2, but west. Are you familiar with it? Did you ever see
that? I call it the Big Red Barn, too.
Yeah.
And how much of it did you purchase? How many acres?
It's 66.
Okay. And your intent to do with what? With that property?
Well, we're searching the possibilities. Part of our intent was to do some things with the organization we work with. Some of it, one possibility we looked at is even with the Western Heritage Museum, working with the centers, because with Jerry not being there and Nancy kind of shaping what she wants to do, this would be a much more interactive location. So there's different things we're looking at that would be impactful for kids as far as being involved in, hey, what does it mean like turn of the century farming? You know, what if people do? Or just even people having a chance to farm, you know, that kind of thing. One thing we're doing with that, the part of it's right now overgrown is we're allowing the Fronings, you know, recently Tim died, and so for the family, we're just letting them farm it as a means to help them, not charging anything, just because we want it to be used. We want good things. And
your intent to live in the house?
It's possible intent. Right now, there's a single man with three kids, and that was where the leak was. And so for him to pick up the bill is not possible. And for us, like I said, it's backbreaking. Okay. But I would love to talk more about possible uses and ways we can partner with that facility. So.
Thank you.
Oh, no, I was going to ask Gene something. You're good, Chris. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Walton. Councilmember Cutterback?
He said as you're talking to Mr. Waltman and you're looking at that, can you bring it back to council? Would it be appropriate next week? Just if there are other options that we can look at, can you
Absolutely.
Bring that back to us? Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Cutterback, the only request that I would make is if it's not next week, it'll be the week after, only
okay.
because Diane's out this week.
Yeah.
And I'd like to give her Monday, Tuesday to get her feet back on the ground.
Yes.
And,
okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other comments from citizens? Just because you didn't sign in doesn't mean you can't come up. Anybody else like to come forward to speak? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. And Ms. Smoot, you have something to say?
Yes. Council, I just wanted to let you know that there was a typographical error in the council minutes, which I have corrected. I think I was looking at today's agenda when I was drafting them, and I incorrectly noted that Councilmember Davis led the pledge last week, and in fact, he led it tonight, and last week it was Councilmember Camp. So on the finalized version, it is noted as Councilmember Camp, which is accurate.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda, the revised.
Second.
Okay, thank you. I have a first from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Cutterback to approve the consent agenda. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? All right. Next item on the agenda is unfinished business. This is unfinished business item number one. This is AB 16095, discussion admissions tax, MMC 5.03. Mr. Basil.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. This has been discussed on several occasions in the past, and we just had some citizen comment on it this evening. As staff has looked at this, our takeaway from Council's comments is that Council supports an active youth population and businesses that support that type of activity, such as family fun centers, indoor play areas, and active recreational centers. So knowing that, we did put a revised agenda bill in front of you. It should be in paper copy. And there is four actions there. As we look at action number one, or option number one and two, the problem that staff had with these particular items is it is linked to a dollar amount, and that can be problematic for administration, not only from the staff standpoint, but you put the burden on the business to do a look back and look at their tax rolls and et cetera the year prior to determine if they're subject to the tax or not. So looking at that, it is an option, but we felt it wasn't the best. And then as you roll down to option number three, we could go ahead and amend the code to exclude family fun centers, indoor play areas, and indoor recreation centers. However, after looking at that option, it again gets fairly cumbersome to administer. Exactly, and it's up for interpretation. So we then went back to our code, and if you roll down to the definitions, section C, which is listed there, it has a pretty comprehensive list of where this admissions tax is applicable. The one portion of this that could be removed is right after it says amusement park and arcade, about the middle of the paragraph, comma, or any similar place. If that were, that one phrase was to be removed, it would essentially allow businesses that we've described, such as youth activity centers, family fund centers, those type of items, to be excluded from this tax. So staff feels that that's the easiest and most comprehensive way to move forward with this, to exclude those type of businesses. So if that works for council, we will work with legal council to go ahead and make amendments to the code and bring that back at a later date.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you, Gene. So can you just repeat that? I'm sorry, I want to make sure I understand. So it's under definitions under C?
Correct.
And deleting from what point?
After arcade. So amusement park, arcade, comma, or any similar place. We would just get rid of that, or any similar place. And then, of course, as we do this code amendment, we would go back through there, and if there's any other areas that are of concern to council, we could make that adjustment. There's some things that are called out in regards to park events. We would just look at this comprehensively and make an overall update and bring that back.
Okay. And by deleting that phrase, it eliminates what? Family fund centers?
Correct, because we're not specifically calling that out in the code, that type of
thing. By adding that kind of extra into one place.
Correct. So there's two ways you could go. You can list all the businesses that are applicable or list those that are exempt. And we believe that it's better to go ahead and list the ones that are applicable. Then it's very clear other cities have gone this route, such as the city of Snohomish, if I'm not mistaken, lists theaters specifically. And so
they list that as their exempt, like, saying that that is the only thing we tax, right?
That's correct, that's my understanding.
Okay. Because when I looked at this, and we've had a couple weeks to think about it, and we've heard from a couple residents and business owners, you know, as I said a couple weeks ago, a couple things I'm looking at is really keeping it simple to monitor and to comply for the staffing and to be able to do that. I think that's important, to keep it simple. Also looking at making sure small businesses and we're business friendly and we're not taxing and limiting possible new businesses wanting to come in or getting all of a sudden hit with an unforeseen business tax that could affect their business, obviously. And then keeping our current budget whole, which we currently receive about $130,000 in our admissions tax, and the majority of that is from the theater, correct?
All I can speak to is I know that we receive about $130,000 of tax.
I don't know where that stems from.
I would suggest that the majority comes from the theater.
Okay. Because originally I was looking at, before you mentioned just deleting that one phrase, originally I was looking at option four, and it really, the amendment for it was to say that the tax was only applicable to theaters and adult entertainment, and calling out those businesses specifically, and then exempting other businesses in whole. So, and that felt like a way to keep it very simple, easy for staff to monitor, not getting into the annual and tracking the annual amount of revenue that a business gets in. So that's what I was looking at until you brought up that last statement. So I'm curious to hear what the rest of the council thinks on this. Maybe I'll come back to after I hear from the rest of council. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Just a couple things. So the first thing I wanted to say was, obviously, you know, we've heard from the business owners now for 3 weeks in a row, and obviously we feel remorse for the situation and want to help and wouldn't want to be in your shoes in the way that everything has come down. The second thing is, we are all about small business, and we've talked about that as a council for quite a while now, about getting more small business in Monroe and improving the ones that are here, trying to make it easier for them to succeed. So I feel strongly, and because of the fact that there is no finance committee next month, I feel strongly that we need to take some action tonight and make a decision one way or another, and not continue to punt down the road. The third thing I want to say is, just for clarification, this is a pass-through tax, and so I'm on your side. But it needs to be very clear, this is a pass-through tax. This is not, hey, we're going to start taxing your business. It's a pass-through tax that I'm pretty sure from all the comments I've received personally, by email and by phone, that the citizens of Monroe would be happy to pay for, because they're very supportive of the business we're talking about. So I just want to clarify that this is a pass-through tax, and I believe the community supports this business. I'm definitely in favor of doing option four, like we've talked about, and if we need to make the changes like you're saying, Gene, then I'm all for that, for sure.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis?
Well,
just a second. Sorry, Councilmember Davis. Please let the record show that Councilmember Gamble came into chambers at 7:54. I'd like to say it's because they swapped,
one?
But yeah.
Gamble.
Councilmember Gamble entered the entered chambers at 7:54. Thank you. Councilmember Davis, you have the floor.
To go on what you just said there, then basically option four is what's being offered here. If we remove this open-ended statement, we get down to very specific businesses, and it's all right there lined out. And we, you know, this is what we talked about last time. We want to keep it simple. We don't want unintended consequences from things we never even thought of. But we wanted to do something, and my only other option was basically to leave it the way it is, because it is a pass-through tax. But I did see that statement, and that takes something very specific and then just opens the window and says, and everything else that may be similar. So if we do take that, I thank you for that suggestion, because that makes it easy, makes it simple, and makes sense. If we just take that little statement out, then we have option four right there, and we can do that. I'd be willing to do that too, if that were the case. So.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Gene and staff, I really appreciate all the work that's gone into this and hearing the feedback, and I think there's been many different opinions on this. For me, you know, coming into this, my concerns were, you know, the moment we start broadening this out and making, you know, all these different types of exceptions, whether it be threshold or this type of organization or recreation and this, I mean, we create these loopholes, like I said, which, you know, generally means that we go back 6 months, 12 months, even 3 years down the road and find a way to fix those loopholes. And so keeping it simple and clear and concise was, you know, if there was any sort of amendment being brought forward, that would be, you know, where I would tend to lean. You know, it's got to be easy for our city staff to manage, as it was mentioned. It's got to be easy for us to understand as well. So if an issue ever comes up to us again, you know, it's easy for us to look at this and go, well, this is exactly what it says. You know, we stand by this or whatnot. But then also on the business side, I mean, it's got to be easy for the business owners to understand. I personally grew up in self-employed families, and that was, you know, quite honestly, one of the biggest angsts within the family was trying to figure out, you know, are they within the law or not? And, you know, when it's very convoluted, you sometimes gamble and you just don't know. I mean, so if the easier we can make it on the business side, the better. You know, option four definitely, in my opinion, I think helps do a lot of that. Simply taking out or any similar place, to me, still leaves it a little vague. You know, and the glaring one in there is golf course. I mean, most of us would agree, you know, a type of golf course like Blue Boy or Echo Falls or something like that. But, you know, in the spirit of this conversation, how we're talking about indoor recreation and whatnot, what if someone was to bring in a mini golf course, indoor mini golf course, you know, based off of the details and of that, you know, they would still be required to pay that tax, as far as my understanding of that. So, you know, I heard the theater and adult entertainment come up a lot in previous discussions as you know, two types of businesses that you know, some would entertain to you know, keep the tax with, and you know, to me that seems simple. That's pretty clear in my mind. So that's my feedback on it, and interested to hear others.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Obviously, I missed 2 weeks ago when this was discussed, so I apologize for that. I'm kind of on the back end of the curve here. My concern is only that it's equitable to all the businesses in Monroe, that we're not signaling out anybody for something somebody else would like to have as well and can't have, and I don't know how to get to that. I'm deferring to your conversation 2 weeks ago that you had more than I know, am privy to, but I'm still listening.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
So, now I was out a couple weeks ago as well, but from my recollection, as far as the collection of the fee, the only entity that we've collected, and the reason why that this original ordinance was put in place was because of the movie theater. Is that not correct?
Go ahead and transmit.
It's maybe Brad or Jane or whoever wants to answer.
It's my understanding that's where it originated, but it was also revised by council in 2013 to make sure that arcades was specifically noted in there for the fee to be applicable to. And I don't know that Diane got a chance before she left town to do the research on exactly what businesses we were being collected from or we were collecting from, and I apologize for that. We just literally ran out of time. But we could still bring that answer back.
Because I know what, and I remember asking, I can't remember if I asked in an open session or if I was asked afterwards with Diane, but that was my recollection, is that, I mean, even the arcade, we don't have the arcade that we have in town, there is no cover charge. There's no, you go in and you purchase tokens, that sort of thing. Go ahead.
And the code was designed, as we understand it, to be applicable to the quarter going into the machine at an arcade. We received 5% tax in that quarter. That's my understanding, but I understand the code correctly, the way it's written today.
Well, we're not collecting that. Would be my response to that. That's what I would want to...
I'm not sure if we are or not.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to have Diane finish that with all her other finance work that she was doing.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, when I look at the information that we did get 2 weeks ago and saw that, you know, Bob, or, you know, I wanted to say, hey, what is our competition? If you want to look at that way, doing it, you know, around us in some of the other cities and counties. You know, you look at Bothell and it specifically calls out, hey, it's movie theater only. And you know, and that's what we know that that's what the original, where this originally came from, and I get that they were trying to foresee in the future, but we have a lot of stuff actually, and I know she was going to check into that as well, whether you look at the Sky Valley, gymnastics. There's a lot of different, you know, places that, you know, charge that type of fee that we have not been collecting. So, I mean, it really, the only thing we have been is around the movie, so I would be, you know, in looking at the surrounding information that we were given 2 weeks ago, that kind of what our competition or others have been doing, I would be more inclined to look in that type of manner, because I don't want to lose these type of businesses that have wanted to house themselves here. But I would want more information on, you know, what has been collected. You know, is that statement accurate? In addition, it was also for like the events in the park, if we've been capturing the tax on that.
Yeah.
That was the only other one that I think that potentially we were.
Correct. And I asked Director Farrell, excuse me, today about that, and in the past we have collected that.
Yeah, that's the bit of information I'd really like to see, is the amount that has come in just from that tax, and can we delineate it by what's theater and then what other entities that we've collected.
Go ahead, Mr. President.
Certainly, and Council, specific to this code, you've got the ability to administer this tax any way you would like, just as long as it's consistent and it's not singling out one business, because we don't obviously make legislation to single out one business. A group of businesses, absolutely, and so Council can change this any way you want. I mean, if you wanted it just to be applicable to a theater, you can certainly do that. What we've come up with was just the simplest repair, trying to keep our vision for the future, because we have no idea how the city's going to develop in the next 20, 30 years. In fact, this specific legislation's been on the books for 20 years now, and we had no idea 20 years ago if we'd have a business similar to what we're talking about this evening to be in town here. So,
you foresaw a golf course?
We foresaw a golf course.
Yeah.
In fact, we had one. You know, it was outside the city, but there was a Monroe golf course, and we have no idea where annexations are going to take us in the future, where we may end up with a golf course in the city. We just don't know.
You still have the floor?
Yeah, no, I guess it's a twofold for me. It's also to understand if we were to make any sort of change, what kind of impact would that be to the revenue? So what's the revenue situation associated with what we've already been taking in? Before we vote on anything, then, you know, I think we would all want to know that, you know, what if we were to vote one way or another, if we were going to limit or exclude a business group, we want to make sure that we're not shooting ourselves in the foot, or we just created another revenue problem per se.
Understood.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
In light of what Jason said, I'd like to go along with what he said, in that, like, with more information, and not rush to a vote tonight just because we think we don't want to kick it down the road. And I'm not sure we got all the input from Diane that we'd like to have, based on who's paying it, who's not, and if so, why not? It's not like we're going to give these guys a bill until we decided what we're going to do anyway. So I concur with Jason on this one.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
So we've had three weeks, I think, of discussing this. So I do agree with Councilmember Hanford that it would be wise to make a decision tonight. And I know we might not have all the information. And originally, again, I had talked about defining the business to be very specific, movie theaters and adult entertainment. But hearing what the city staff brought forward with changing the current ordinance or the code, in just taking out that "or in any similar place," I think that makes the most sense moving forward, because I do believe there's taxes that I hadn't thought about that were being collected, such as at Lake Tai, an admission tax if we had an event there. That my first blush at this of defining it to movie theaters and adult entertainment, that wouldn't fit in. That tax we're already collecting. And that's part of my goal too, was to make sure we were keeping the budget whole. And that's why making sure, as we've been told, movie theaters is the biggest, you know, amount of revenue for this admission tax that we're collecting. So I think we need to move forward tonight, and it doesn't prevent us from down the road as more information, or if, you know, as the city grows and we redefine this. But so I will make a motion that we go with option 4. I'm trying to think of how to do this. But it's just amending our current code to take out the words "or any similar place."
Okay, so if I may restate what I understand the motion to be, because this is not an ordinance, I'm understanding that the motion is to provide direction to mayor and staff to come back with a revision to code where we remove "or any similar place" from the admissions tax section of code under item C, as described in the revised agenda bill.
Correct.
Okay.
Second.
All right, I have a first from Councilmember Cutaback, a second from Councilmember Hanford. As part of this motion, I'd like Council just to understand that Mr. Brazel also pointed out that there's a little bit of housekeeping that we'd like to do. And so the ordinance that we would be bringing back to you would include some housekeeping. And as Mr. Brazel had pointed out, we would also take a look to make certain that there are, and that we understand any unintended consequences of the motion that you just made here this evening. And I think Mr. Brazel has something to say. Yes, sir.
You just hit the nail on the head. Okay. That's what Director Feilberg was pointing out as well. There's other places in the code, like I mentioned earlier, that we should probably adjust as well. But I understand your motion to mean that as well.
To bring it back.
Yep. Okay. All right. So I have a first and I have a second from Councilmember is that Hanford? All right. Discussion on the motion. Councilmember Hanford, you are next.
Did you call me Camford?
I don't think so. I should have had some coffee this week. You know, I went and I had decaf.
Okay.
I'm not doing a decaf again in the
evening.
You want
to know what she said?
Okay. I'm just creating names this evening.
Okay, I just clarify. So I really believe that doing this will not affect the budget. Your question was, you know, let's make sure to see what all the impacts are going to be. We've talked about this for 3 weeks, like you said. Diane brought numbers to us. So by taking out that one phrase, we're not really affecting the budget at all. And so I'm highly in favor of this. I totally understand staff needs time. That's great. However, I would also just encourage that to be a priority, so that we can get this taken care of, so that the business owner has some kind of closure and some kind of answer in the next couple of weeks, if possible.
And I've been in communication with the business owner Saturday and also this morning and last night. I know that they're aware that that this is giving direction tonight, that we have to have an ordinance prepared. We'd like to have our attorney review it. I had indicated to them that it could be mid-August before we bring this forward. And again, we want to make certain that we catch everything. So a couple of weeks would be good. I think we're looking at about mid-August. But I have made them aware of that.
Thank you. I just didn't want it to become, let's edit the whole code now, and then all of a sudden it's a 2 month process. So.
No, and that's the reason for the motion, is to make certain we understand the scope of council's desired changes. There was one additional change when staff and I were looking at this evening at 4, there was one additional thing that I read that I was a little concerned about that we want to look at and make certain we may want to remove that. And we can go over that when after we've had a chance to look at that a little more.
Thank you.
Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why I'll be voting no, and just because there was, I feel we don't know the specific, and if we're going to be pushing it out to the August anyway, it just seems like to me that we could get that information by next week and be able to make a maybe even a more, besides just moving it, maybe it is a actual blanket statement because we're not going to incur revenue. Maybe it is just a, you know, adult entertainment and the theater, and that would be the correct course of action if we had those facts in front of us. So that's all.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough?
So if we either vote yes on this tonight, then that would mean that it's going to come back in 3 weeks or in August for a final 4 weeks, and in that time, we would have the information that Councilman Gamble and I are asking about.
Yes, sir.
For a final vote that 4 weeks. So tonight we're just asking for him to come back with the possible changes and the information we're looking for so we can make an informed decision.
Yes, sir. The motion that you made this evening is to give us direction so that rather than coming up with more options, that we actually can proceed with revising the code and then doing an analysis to make certain that we understand the implications of those initial changes. We would, at the same staff at the same time, would bring forward the additional information. So this is non-binding. You can vote differently when the ordinance comes forward, and we can also do amendments to the ordinance as we learn new information. But it's to set us on a path rather than continue to talk about options.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Cutterback.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that we have time to, council has another look at this when the ordinance is brought back with more information. And as Mayor said, it's going to be 3 weeks away. I'm not going to be maybe 1 or 2, but yeah, so there's time to change votes or those.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
I realize that there's a motion on the floor and so a vote's got to be taken, but is there, I mean, really we're just given direction in this case as far as, you know, take it back to staff. I mean, we could have done the same thing without a motion, correct?
That is correct. I could have said without objection we'll move this way. Honestly, with two council members sounding like they're not in favor of this direction, I'm not certain where you are. I think I would be preferring to have a vote. If it comes up 3-3, then I'd go ahead and just direct staff and see if there's objection or defer to next week. So
I guess it really doesn't matter which way I vote. I mean, I've made my point that, you know, just by removing that one statement still leaves it pretty vague in my opinion, regardless of whether I say yes or no. I mean, it's going to, staff's still going to look at it, still going to flesh it out, and still going to come back in 2 to 3 weeks, probably. So, I mean, so it, I guess it just doesn't, yeah. So anyway, that's my point, is it's still too vague, but knowing that it's coming back, it'll happen regardless.
Understood.
I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, understood. Councilmember Gamble, thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Jeff, is it's coming back with that ordinance, just with that removed. That's the direction we're giving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, that's all I'm saying. I'm not so sure that that's the right way to go.
Mm-hmm.
We find out that we haven't been getting any money from this other stuff, and it could be a very clear, definitive statement in there and get rid of all the ambiguity, to your point, and we move forward. And you still could do it in the same timeline for 3 weeks. That's it.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
So if I'm understanding it correctly, the direction to come back in 3 weeks with that one change is one thing, and the information we lack with it, where Councilman Rasmussen is saying he's not happy with some of the other things that are in this ordinance that need to be looked at, so there could be a different option that we are not voting to come back with in 3 weeks.
Yeah, this is a non-binding vote. It's to give us direction so that staff, right now we've got four options. Two pairs of them are similar. They, you know, two of them take an approach with thresholds, and three of them look at uses. And it's just a matter of winnowing things down so that we can focus on one product to bring forward for council to discuss. That one product comes forward, you can see the way that it looks, and then we can make adjustments from there. But right now we've kind of got this broad area and we're just trying to winnow it down to one, you know, to one product to bring forward for a more detailed, concrete discussion. And like I said, if a motion hadn't been made and if it had been clear that there was a majority without an objection, no motion would have been necessary. I would have just directed staff accordingly. All right. Are there any other comments? Okay, there's a motion on the floor. I'm going to go ahead and call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so we have a tie, 3-3, with Councilmember Scarborough, Councilmember Rasmussen, and Councilmember Gamble voting against. I'm going to go ahead and break the tie. I can, correct? Okay, and I'm going to go ahead so that we have a product that we can talk about, have staff go ahead and prepare the ordinance, the direction of the motion, the direction of the motion was made, and you'll be getting back that ordinance as the next place to go from, along with the additional information that was requested this evening. Okay, sound good? Okay, do you have any questions, Gene?
No, we'll make it work.
Okay. All righty. Thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. And that next item is under final action. This is final action number... I'm sorry. Why don't we do new business? New business item number one, AB 16096, ordinance number 11, 2016, adopting impact fee deferral system for first reading. Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, ordinance number 11-2016 would, if and when passed, establish an impact fee deferral system for the city of Monroe. And this specifically for single-family detached and attached residences. And this ordinance responds to state legislation that was passed in 2015 where it requires local governments to collect impact fees, and the city of Monroe collects impact fees or has the authority to collect impact fees for traffic, parks, and schools to establish an impact fee deferral program by September 1, 2016. This item or agenda item has been talked or discussed by the city council and I believe a council committee during the course of the past year, last time being March 1st, that the council gave some direction in terms of what it would want in the ordinance on some key policy issues. The key policy issues are basically at what point in time the impact fees could be deferred, and the second would be how many deferrals could applicant have in a given particular year. I'll talk about those a little bit, but an ordinance was drafted and went to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission held a public hearing on June 13th, and the ordinance is now before you in your packet. Basically does reflect the direction that the City Council gave back in March. And in terms of that public hearing before the Planning Commission, we noticed that the master builders, the school districts, and many builders and developers that are currently building projects and have built projects during the course of the past few years, and we had no testimony whatsoever, which was a little surprising, but there was no testimony. So just getting to those key policy issues. One is time of collection. State law gives the local government the choice of deferring or allowing an applicant to defer impact time of occupancy, and that's when our staff goes out and says this building's ready to be occupied, or the time of first closing of the property, which could happen even after the staff goes out and indicates that the property or the house is available for occupancy. The ordinance that you have before you, or in the recommendation of the Planning Commission, identifies the time of final occupancy as the allowable deferral date or time. And then there's a provision in the state law that says an applicant can have up to 20 deferrals per year, although a local government can extend that or increase that above 20, but the Planning Commission is recommending that that be at 20. And the school district, the Monroe School District and the Snohomish School District provided information basically indicating that they preferred that the cap be at 20, and the law says that we have to give substantial weight to the recommendations of the school district. There's probably a third policy issue, but it's not in the ordinance itself. The ordinance authorizes the city to, the state law and the ordinance authorizes the city to apply an administrative fee for every applicant that requests a deferral. That would need to be done as part of the fee resolution. It's not included in the fee resolution changes on your agenda tonight. And I think what staff will do is simply Once the ordinance gets adopted, we'll just see how many people take advantage of it and how much work is actually needed to process a deferral, and then come back to you with the fee resolution meeting next year with a recommendation on what to do. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I will say this, that not specifically related to the ordinance itself, but we had a meeting with the master builders on a different topic last week, and just to make sure that they were aware of this ordinance, I mentioned it to them, and they pointed out that it's not unimportant to them, but they pointed out that the legislation started during the Great Recession. This was really legislation that responded to the Great Recession to really try to jumpstart housing. And so it started like in 2010, 2011, and every year would come back, and finally it was passed in 2015. And here we are now in 2016, and that issue about housing, the need to jumpstart housing, just isn't there right now. And so that may be why they didn't particularly testify, and that might be why some of the builders didn't particularly testify also, although in talking to some of the builders earlier this year, they indicated that they may not even take advantage of this, because to be able to hire staff to go out and record liens and release liens on every deferral that they do would just be too much time. So again, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you very much. Councilmember Cutterback.
No questions. I know that we've had many discussions on this and updates, and I agree with the Planning Commission's findings, and when you look at the, where you had the stakeholder comments, there's pretty much consensus, or they don't, like you said, the developers were, we pay at the time the building permit is issued anyways, and as you said, jump-starting housing isn't the issue now. It might have been an issue back in 2008 or 9 again when the economy was down. So I'm going to make a motion and move to accept this first reading ordinance number 011-2016, implementing the requirements of Engross Senate Bill ESB 5923 by amending sections 20.07.150, 20.10.100, and 20.12.110 of the Monroe Municipal Code related to the impact fee deferral program for single-family detached and single-family attached dwelling units, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion from Councilmember Cutterback and a second from Councilmember Gamble to accept as first reading ordinance number 011-2016, implementing the requirements of Engrossed Senate Bill ESB 5923 by amending certain sections as described in the requested action in this agenda bill. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. The next item on the agenda, is this for that? Okay, so we are now moving down to final action, and we would like to add to the final action. And so there is a need to add an item to the agenda. This is AB 16100, resolution number 011-2016, regarding the City of Monroe's opposition to the issuance of a proposed marijuana retailer license. Without objection, this item will be added to the July 12th agenda as final action item number 4. And is this the agenda? Okay. Okay, and so the agenda bill is City of Monroe Resolution Number 011-2016, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Monroe, Washington, authorizing and directing the mayor to notify the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board of the city's opposition to the issuance of proposed marijuana license number 422399-7A, and to request any adjudicative hearing before any final action on said license application is taken. So we have supporting materials that will be handed out at the time of the discussion. And do I need a motion to add this to the agenda? I believe the answer is yes. Right. Yeah, it says without.
The way it was brought forward was without objection. Right. So unless there's objection, it can simply be added.
Perfect.
This is just to add to the agenda. This is not to approve anything.
Thank you. Is there any objection to me adding what I just said to the agenda as final action item number 4? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to final action item number one. And this is final action item number one, AB 16097, resolution number 010-2016, amending master fee schedule. Mr. Brazel.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This is a housekeeping matter that we look at every year. And Director Osaki had mentioned it on the prior discussion item. The request to action this evening is to move to approve resolution number 010-2016, amending the City of Monroe master fee schedule and fees, fines, penalties, interests, and charges for 2016.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to approve resolution number 010-2016, amending the City of Monroe master fee schedule and fees, fines, penalties, interest, and charges for 2016.
Second.
Okay, we have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen for the requested action in AB 16097 for resolution 010-2016, amending master fee schedule. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. So motion passes 6-0. Thank you. Final action number two. This is AB 16098, ordinance number 012-2016, Iron Eagle Rezone, first and final reading. As this does involve a rezone, Christy Kyle's coming forward. So this is Ms. Kyle, senior planner from our community development department. But before she begins to read this in, this does require that we go through the appearance of fairness doctrine questions. So Ms. Smoot.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will be going through the appearance of fairness disclosures this evening. Bear with me. Because the consideration of a site-specific rezone involves a public hearing and implicates the land use rights of a specific landowner slash party, the proceeding is quasi-judicial in nature and is subject to the appearance of fairness doctrine. The appearance of fairness doctrine requires that such proceedings be fair, not only in fact, but also in appearance. The legal standard under the doctrine is whether a disinterested person being appraised of all relevant facts would be reasonably justified in thinking a particular decision maker's interest or involvement in the case may affect his or her judgment. I will now ask the council as a whole the following questions. A lack of a response will be viewed as a negative response. Thank you. I didn't write that. All right, here we go. The first section will be addressing interest. Does any council member have a financial interest in the property, in the project, or underlying property? Does any council member have a family member who is a party of record? Does any council member have a personal or familiar employment or other business relationship with a party of record? Does any council member own property within 500 feet of the project site? Is any council member aware of any other personal interest or involvement with the project, the parties of record, or the property that should fairly be disclosed? Thank you. I will be moving on to section two, which is impartiality. Is any council member aware of any personal bias for or against any party for or against the proposal? Has any council member prejudged any of the issues? Has any council member not reviewed the record materials for the proposal? Has any council member aware of any reason why he or she would not be able to perform his or her duties in an objective, impartial, and fair manner? Thank you. I will be going on to section C, which addresses ex parte communications. Has any council member had any ex parte communications regarding this matter while the proposal has been pending? Thank you. Please let the record show that there were no affirmative responses. At this time, the floor should be open for any parties of record to formally challenge any of the council members. Pursuant to RCW 4236080, appearance of fairness challenges are waived unless they are raised promptly when the reason for the alleged disqualification becomes known. Please let the record show that there were no challenges made by parties of record. And this concludes the appearance of fairness disclosures. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Sorry.
No problem.
Go ahead.
So what we have for you is ordinance number 012-2016, the Iron Eagle Rezone. The city received a privately initiated rezone application for approximately 6.61 acres of land located at 16691 Curry Road. The property consisted of two zoning designations, UR 9600 and MR 6000. The rezone request is to amend the City of Monroe zoning map for the entire subject property from UR 9600 and MR 6000 to a single zoning designation of UR 6000. The rezone request does not require amendment to the City of Monroe comprehensive plan, and the proposed rezone is consistent with the plan, policies, and density for the area identified in the current adopted City of Monroe comprehensive plan. The hearing examiner held a public hearing on the proposed rezone on June 9th. The hearing examiner's recommendation to the City Council dated June 21st is approval of the rezone and preliminary plat. Staff is requested to waive council rules of procedure requiring the two reading of ordinances and adopt the proposed rezone ordinance upon first and final reading.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Ms. Kyle? Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I will move to waive council rules of procedures requiring two readings of ordinances.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Davis to waive council rules of procedures requiring two readings of ordinances. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye. I'm sorry, Councilmember Scarborough.
Is this where I would ask what the difference is between what it is and what it wants to be, allows that piece of property to be used for, or after the motion's done?
You can ask it now, or you can ask it before the next motion, your choice.
I'll ask it after the next motion.
Thank you. So we're going to go ahead and call for the vote. All in favor of the motion to waive council procedure requiring two readings of ordinances, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. Is there a question or a motion for B?
Yeah.
My question is...
Councilmember Scarborough.
To change zoning from what they both are now to what you want it to be allows them to do what with the property, because I believe it's it used to be a driving range, and then it was a... earth, you know, bark and whatnot, something in there. So what are we trying to change it to do to make it? Are we trying to make it residence?
Yes, it'll be the rezone would take it from urban to residential, 9,600 square foot lot zoning, and a multifamily residential zoning of 6,000. It'll take it to, once it's rezoned, the next piece would be for the Iron Eagle preliminary plat to subdivide it into 32 single family lots.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to adopt upon first and final reading ordinance number 012-2016, amending zoning designations in the Iron Eagle rezone area from urban residential 9600, UR 9600, and multifamily residential 6000, MR 6000, to urban residential 6000, UR 6000. Setting forth supportive findings, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Second.
Thank you. I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Davis for the motion to adopt upon first and final reading ordinance number 012-2016 as described in requested action B in Agenda Bill 1609-8. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion. Any abstentions? Okay, seeing none, motion passes 6-0. Thank you. I am going to have caffeinated coffee next week. All right. Thank you all very much. Did I miss something?
Setting a date for consideration.
Yes, we're going to move on to the next item on the agenda. Thank you. So the next item on the agenda is final action number 3. This is AB 16099, setting date for consideration for Iron Eagle preliminary plat. Ms. Kyle.
Thank you. Again, the second item is for setting a date for consideration of the hearing examiner's recommendation to the City Council regarding the Iron Eagle preliminary plat. On June 9th, the hearing examiner held an open record public hearing for the proposed Iron Eagle preliminary plat. located at 16691 Curry Road on approximately 6.61 acres. The proposal is to be developed in a single phase totaling 32 single-family residential lots. The hearing examiner's recommendation, submitted on June 21st, is that the Monroe City Council approve the Iron Eagle preliminary plat with conditions. Staff is asking that the council move to set the date of July 26th for the council's closed record hearing in consideration of the hearing examiner's recommendation.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
I move to set the date of July 26, 2016 for the City Council's closed record consideration of the hearing examiner's recommendation on Iron Eagle, a preliminary plat file number 15-SDPL-0001.
Second.
Thank you. That was a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Cutterback for the requested action to set the date of July 26, 2016 for the City Council's closed record consideration of the hearing examiner's recommendation on Iron Eagle preliminary plat file number 15-SDPL-0001. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. We're going to go on to the next item on the agenda. This is final action 4, which we just added to the agenda. And Mr. Osaki, so this is agenda bill item number 16-100, resolution number 011-2016, authorize the mayor to notify the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board of the City of Monroe's opposition to the issuance of proposed marijuana retailer license 422399-7A. Mr. Osaki.
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, I know you've just gotten this material right now, so I'll just try to summarize the content of that material while you're looking at it. The City of Monroe has received notice from the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board of an application for a marijuana retail business in the City of Monroe. That sets into motion a process under state law, and it's a pretty abbreviated process in terms of timeline. So based on that, state law says that the local government has 20 days to respond back to the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board with any objections that it may have regarding the proposed state issuance of that license. And as part of the agenda packet, there's a resolution, but there's also the actual notice of the marijuana application that's included in the packet. And that notice will need to be returned back to the state. And you can see at the very bottom of that notice, it asks a series of questions. And one of those questions, number 4, it's not so much a question, but it's if you disapprove of the state's issuance of a license per state law, you must attach a letter to the board detailing the reasons for the objection and a statement of all the facts on which your objections are based. And above that, number 3, is if you disapprove and the board contemplates issuing a license, do you wish to request an adjudicative hearing before final action is taken? And so what the resolution does that is before you tonight, it authorizes the mayor to submit to the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board a statement of objection and also to request a hearing as provided for in state law, keeping in mind that it is at the discretion of the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board as to whether or not it wants to grant a hearing. And past precedence has been that they are unlikely to do so. But regardless, in order to actually be in a position to have that hearing, we need to at least request it. And so the agenda bill outlines a few items, and without going into a lot of detail, I would anticipate that the letter, if the council authorizes the submittal of the letter, would at least address a couple of items. One is, under state law, there are specific requirements that the state has to meet before it issues a license, and one of those deals with separation and distance requirements from the proposed marijuana use to other sensitive types of land uses. And there's a 1,000-foot separation requirement from any proposed marijuana business, state licensed marijuana business, to these sensitive land uses. And we feel, based on our review so far, that there is a land use within that 1,000 foot perimeter, and certainly we'll bring that to the state's attention. And then the other item we would bring to the state's attention is that certainly you know that the city council passed an ordinance that prohibits state licensed marijuana businesses throughout the entire city. And the state will issue a state license regardless of what the local zoning controls are. But regardless, we want to make sure that the state is aware and the applicant's aware that our local codes prohibit marijuana-related businesses and that we will not issue any permits or licenses for marijuana-related businesses, even if a state license is issued. So those would be a couple of the items that would be included in the letter. The resolution that you have before you, again, that we're asking that the city council pass would authorize the mayor to submit a letter of objection and request a hearing.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Osaki. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you for catching the staff, and appreciate being aware of this. I move to approve resolution number 011/2016, authorizing and directing the mayor to notify the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board of the city's opposition to the issuance of marijuana license 422-399-7A, and to request an adjudicative hearing before any final action on said license application is taken.
Second.
Thank you. I have a motion from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Davis, to approve resolution number 011-2016, authorizing directing the mayor to notify the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board of the city's opposition to the issuance of marijuana license 422-399-7A and to request an adjudicative hearing before any final action on said license application is taken. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. Next item that we have on the agenda is councilmember reports. So we'll go ahead and start off with the council committees. I see the first one is council Legislative Affairs Committee. That committee met this evening. Councilmember Hanford, I think you were serving as the chair of that committee since Councilmember Camp was not available.
Yeah, I will give you that. Excuse me.
Sorry.
We discussed the legislative 2017 draft legislative issues with Representative Brian Wall, and he was there as well as Councilmember Scarbo and I. And the issues that we talked about were issues that we talked about before with Councilmember Camp at the last meeting, and so it was just kind of a review of everything. The mayor was able to attend this meeting this time, and so basically the three areas are transportation, capital budget, and GFS policy issues. And the suggestion was to take one in each area for them to highlight and really push for state funding. And so we're going to be bringing that on August 9th. He will be here presenting to the council on what the different options, what we're looking at. And pretty much, if we can, in the next, well, I'll show you. For transportation, our number one was State Route 522. For the capital budget, our number one was Lake Tai Park Athletic Fields, with the understanding that the construction of Frontage Road 7 or 191st to Chain Lake Road is also a priority, and we as a council need to decide between the three different options whether we want 191st to come straight down to the theater, or we want it to angle over to across the top of the ridge to the roundabout, or whether we want Frontage Road 7. So that's something that we can discuss, and staff's going to look into budget options and kind of give us some figures so that we can look at those numbers. So we don't have to decide anything now, but they're going to be bringing us some information so we can decide. Once we've come up with a decision and there's some agreement with DOT, formal agreement that our city makes with DOT on whatever route that's going to be, now we can elevate that and let's look for funding. But until we come up with our own plan, we can't really ask for money. So, and then under the policy issue and everything, Main Street program funding was the top priority for that our committee agreed on. So again, he'll be coming on August 9th, and we'll hear more about that in the future. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. The last one also was fiscal sustainability and protecting our shared revenue streams, liquor revenues, marijuana, necessary for essential city services. And the concern is that the state's going to want to take and continue to take more of our revenues from that, which is then going to drive up our costs for services. So pretty much Mr. Christensen hit on most of these also. I think that's it, unless you have anything else you'll add.
Are there any questions for Councilmember Hanford? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much, Councilmember Hanford. The next committee to report out on is this is the Community Transit Board of Directors meeting. Councilmember Cuddeback.
Yes, you have the agenda in the packet. I was unable to attend last week due to a work conflict.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, seeing none, Snohomish Health District Board of Directors, Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Prior to today's meeting, I actually had the interview with the Ruckel House group. They're the third-party group that's kind of overseeing and contemplating any changes with the health district. And so if any of you get the call, certainly do your best to talk with them. Unfortunately, it truly does take about an hour of time to go through their questions and their conversation, but Health District is definitely looking for feedback from our community members. In regards to today's meeting, a couple of quick notes. Dr. Goldbaum did communicate second confirmed case of Zika within Snohomish County. It was contracted outside of the United States, as most of them have, he indicated it appears to be minor, if you will, and something that they are definitely monitoring. Jeff Getchell presented with the county health environmental health report, and I apologize, the handouts that were given I left at home prior to the meeting, or between the meeting and here, so I'll get those to Liz so she can get them out. Off the top of my head, the big note I found interesting is if you want to live a long life, you need to be in Monroe, Sultan, or Cold Bar. Apparently, we average length of life is where we're at, so and within the county. Most of the meeting was a big group discussion on a closer look at the heroin and opioid epidemic within Snohomish County and some of the stuff that the health district is looking at, working on, and coming forward. So we'll have more information to present to this council and other communities within the county coming up. Of course, the big question after the discussion was, well, how are you going to fund it? Staff looped back to the per capita funding, which I've mentioned at previous meetings. So, so definitely more to come on that. Regarding the per capita funding, as I reported last month, where Health Board is definitely looking for feedback from our communities on, their thoughts as far as even funding health districts and what that looks like within our own communities. And so any thoughts or ideas on that, I would love to hear feedback and take back to next month's Health Board meeting on August 9th. And then the other item to bring up is the revised drug take-back program is moving forward as scheduled, and it should be out in play by December. So that's what we've got.
Great. Thank you very much. Councilmember Cutterback.
Dr. Goldblum and I'm not sure who the chair is. Is it Brian Sullivan?
Yeah.
Are they going to get out publicly and come to council meetings and city meetings to talk about the per capita?
I would like it if they would, and I know they've mentioned it, but
Nothing on the agenda.
Okay. Would it be possible to reach out to them and ask for them
yes.
to come to a meeting?
Yeah, we can invite the health district, and we have invited Executive Summers, Ms. Smoot.
I actually just received late today a letter from the Snohomish Health District staff requesting to come. I just did not have a chance to brief Amir and Jean, and they're looking for a date in July or August, so I can follow up with you all tomorrow and see about scheduling.
Okay. The answer is yes.
There we go.
Councilmember Cutterback, you still have the floor?
Nope. That's
okay.
It.
Thank you. Any other questions for Councilmember Rasmussen? Okay, seeing none, let's go down the line. And everybody's in different seats now. Councilmember Gant.
Yeah.
Damn. Sorry, Councilmember Gant.
Yeah. No, I was glad to hear the report on the legislative Lake Tide fields. I actually have some pictures and stuff that I took this weekend that I was going to put together and I'll send them. But it just kind of shows, you know, we saw the weather this weekend. We had a tournament in town. There were 16 plus 9 new teams. There was another 8 to 10 new teams. And a 10-minute downpour on Saturday. And I think we all remember that 10-minute downpour canceled all the games on Saturday. And we were this close to having to cancel the entire tournament. And as soon as that 10-minute downpour was done, and I took pictures, I couldn't believe it, you know, myself. The sun came out, everything was good, and on Miracle, the only way we were able to limp through is because we could play all the games on Miracle League Field, or at least keep some of them going, so that we didn't have to do everything on Sunday. And, you know, it just was another, you know, illustration that, hey, if we had Lake Tide, a couple fields out there, you know, whatever, 2-3, and then you have Rotary, that events like that, yeah, you go into the dugout for the deal that comes. And on Friday, it was great to see, you know, Friday, the tournament started on Friday night. It was great to see. I was driving home after the game downtown, and downtown was covered in little green jerseys and people running in and out of restaurants. We had the entire Issaquah Baseball Club in the restaurant. So that's, kids-wise, that's upwards of 28. There's two teams, two different age groups. That's really not, I understand they didn't even in the best. They pick up after themselves, but there still was that much business. But it just shows that we have teams from Auburn, from Bainbridge Island. They come down from Canada, you know, all that type. So they're staying in hotels. And we almost lost, you know, all of it for the weekend. So great to see that. This will just kind of reiterate that, you know, that point. And as we look at, you know, the Finance Committee dives into some of the, you know, one-time things and looking for grant money. I know the big time with grant money, they're always looking for, well, hey, if you can match it, or if you've got something going towards that, it makes us, you know, maybe get earmarked or more successful in landing some of that grant money. So we'll just keep that top of mind. But it was another illustration. And there's another tournament this weekend. So we'll need to see whether or not we make it through with the weather.
Thank you, Councilmember Gamble. Councilmember Davis.
I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually got to watch part of the tournament from the back door of the club because I had to work. And, yeah, it was pretty obvious when the games got canceled because it was Highway 2 traffic on Sky River Parkway.
Sky River Parkway.
Yeah, they were going one direction, so I'm glad to hear it. Everyone stuck around for a while. Just a couple of things. I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but this Friday is the Seahawks Gatorade Junior Training Camp at Sky River Park. And I know Mike and Denise and Brad and everyone have been working hard on getting that all set up and ready to go. So it's going to be pretty exciting to see that going on down there. If I remember right, you know, they limit these camps. They do four or five of them within the area, and it limits it to about 150 kids. And I believe that it sold out, meaning all the spaces were filled within the first day, within hours. And, you know, the few people I've talked to about this, it sounds like it's, you know, a lot of it's the diehard Seahawk fans that are will go anywhere where there's Seahawks. So, you know, it's to me that's just another good showing of people coming into Monroe for Friday afternoon. So, looking forward to that. And then, you know, I certainly want to take a moment to, you know, in times like this, thank our police department for everything that they do. I mean, you know, unfortunate stuff happens, and it just is a reminder of the work that our officers do for us out there, and you know, makes me feel proud to be in this community where we've got the presence that we do, and these men and women do the work that they do. So, Chief, if you can pass that along to the officers for me, that'd be fantastic, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I wanted to. The only thing on my mind was the assassinations of officers in Dallas, and your email to us forwarding the chief's email. I appreciate that to bring us aware of your communication, Chief. I would like to formally commend our chief for addressing the department the way that you did. Mm-hmm. Chief, your leadership in a tumultuous time is greatly appreciated, and I can't tell you how thankful I am for living in this city under your leadership of the police department. From all the conversations that I've had with city residents, never once has anyone spoken ill of your officers regarding this whole race issue. And apparently some other department gave someone some issues in our city, but it was not our department. And so I just want to thank you and thank your officers. And as in the words that you said, be safe out there, continue to do your job, and know that I and the citizens of Monroe have your back and support your efforts to protect and serve. And I think I feel confident speaking for the council that we have your back as well, and we have their back. So please thank the officers.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Yeah, I would like to echo that. It's been on my mind, obviously, the last week. Been watching a lot of the news and having personal experience with our police department. I really commend them. They really represent community policing where they know their community, and that breaks down any barriers or issues that you have. And I just value their presence, and I feel, again, fortunate and blessed to live in a community where the police are. They're all about protecting the citizens, and that's very clear. So, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Ditto. Not to belabor the point. The other, I don't see Mike Fairler tonight. Is somebody going to report on the whiteboard function?
Mr. Brazel. Yeah, Mr. Brazel will give a report on that. Yes.
Went down early, walked around. I left about 9:30. I did a stay for the event, but just to see how big it was and what entailed having everybody get ready to have it. I'm not sure how you collect the tickets in a situation like that, because I didn't see an entrance place.
You were there early. There was an entrance place later. Yeah.
So it looked like it could have been quite the thing, so I'm going to wait for your report.
Thank you. Let's go out to staff. Mr. Wortham?
Okay.
Mr. Osaki?
I have nothing to say.
Okay. Chief?
Yes. I would like to publicly thank the citizens of Monroe since the murder of the five police officers in Dallas on Thursday evening. We have been receiving flowers, pizzas, you name it, and it's been coming in, for the last all to the weekend. It still is coming in today, and it's not from the usual sources that we always have a lot of support from the faith community and life. This is coming from individual families, businesses downtown, and I know the officers really appreciate it, as I do, and I'd just like to say publicly thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Brad, without the PowerPoint, do you have anything to report from Public Works?
No.
Okay, we'll come back to Brad. Gene, do you have anything to report, like on the wakeboard, and then we'll go down to Brad?
Certainly. The first thing, this must be a night of thank yous, because that was on my list, is to thank staff. And it's amazing around here how issues come in the door, and everybody rallies around, gets answers, deals with the topics, and I sure appreciate everything staff does. They certainly helped me. They made me look good, so I appreciate that. In regards to the wakeboard tour, it was a good turnout. Of course, we had the rain in the morning on Saturday, which got it off to a slow start, but it's my understanding that it was a great turnout and the event was a success. There was a beer garden this year that was kind of new, and it was also a success, and I believe there was no issues with that. So I don't know what the final numbers were. Certainly Director Farrell will be able to bring those to you next week or next time we're back together, but it was a good event, and we've got another wake event that will be a wake and skate, I believe is what it is going to be. On that topic, the contractor is pretty well right on target working on the skate park. There's a little bit of some delay. The scope of the project is kind of grown outside the old fencing that was there just because of the sheer demolition that had to happen. And so at any rate, it's created a little extra work, but nothing that's insurmountable. We're working with the contractor. They're awesome. It will be done in time for that event.
Why don't you go ahead and continue with the reports, and what we'll do is we'll finish up the agenda and the extended agenda after Brad gives his item. And let me go ahead and take Councilmember Gamble and then Rasmussen. Councilmember Gamble.
Yeah, and I forgot about the pro-wake tour. The one thing I was going to say is that Parks Department is awesome because they had that huge tournament, and then they also had the pro-wake. And that was another thing that was illustrated then and they even brought up, is that they spent a good 2 hours Saturday morning getting those fields ready, and resources were really short because of the pro-wake, whereas they got rained out 10 minutes, all their work just went down the drain, whereas on a turf field, all those resources could have been to the pro-wake a heck of a lot earlier. They would have never even had to show up.
Councilman Rasmussen.
Thank you. Yeah, junior comments on the skate park remind me. It's appreciate the progress that's making. Every single day, there's more concrete out there. They actually had the pump truck out there, and the main ramp on the I guess it's the south side towards the concession stand looks like it's ready to skate on this afternoon. So. It's looking awesome.
Sounds good. Anything further except for going through next week's agenda?
I just wanted to give a quick update on the downtown decorative light. So I understand it was last week that Rotary voted to approve $2,000 towards that project.
How much?
$2,000 if the other $6,000 is raised, and that could be by anybody. If another group comes in or council decides to use $6,000 out of the contingency or whatever it is, they would pledge that $2,000 towards that project to give us the $8,000 we need to install that light. And they're prepared to do that at any point in time that money is met. That's it.
All right. So I'll just run through my list before we go down to Brad. First, a couple updates. Last week I posted that we received the official numbers from the Office of Financial Management. Our city from last year to this year grew by an estimated 500 people, even. I don't know how they got an even 500, but we are now a population of about 18,200 people, give or take. So that's a pretty substantial increase in 1 year. I think that I had forwarded an email to you about the number of homes we have in the pipeline from pre-app to final plat. That number right now is hovering right around 850 homes. I attended the wakeboard event on Saturday. I was there a little earlier than I needed to be at about 8:45. I got to enjoy the rain outside by the lake. Did not wear my jacket and had regretted that I did not have my jacket, but I did have my sunglasses. Was there until I think about noon or 1 o'clock, and that was a lot of fun watching that. I met with the Master Builders Association representative on Thursday last week, along with somebody doing a development here in town. One of the things that they had expressed was an interest in revising the procedures that we have. As you're aware, for the last year and a half, that has been something that's been very high on my priority list. We had some things, including loss of staff and a couple of big projects we were working on last year, and we're not able to get to those procedures. Brad was on vacation last week, and over the next couple of weeks I'll be touching base with staff to find out how the revisions are to our procedures. But the person who is the company that's interested in doing development here in town wanted to draw our attention to the fact that we still have regulations that reflect notice procedures and timelines and things like that that existed when I was a planner in the early 2000s and late 1990s that could be revised and make it so that just the procedural part of processing subdivisions could go more quickly. Again, that's something I'd like to get done sooner than later. As part of that conversation, they brought up the fact that our city, by way of our rules of procedure, has a second reading, has a first reading and second reading. That's not something required by state law. And it was pointed out to me that that procedure that we have in place in our rules of procedure is something that delays the processing of preliminary plats and rezones by an extra week or so. And that's usually at a time where they're putting out more money because of the nature of their entitlements and the construction work that's occurred. So I recognize that that's something that we do here that's unique to other places that I've worked. And anyway, that feedback came in on Thursday. I also received some correspondence on Jump, Rattle, and Roll, and I had explained that earlier today that I've been in contact off and on with the owners of that company Saturday, last night, and then again this morning to make certain that the material brought to you reflected their concerns better, and that's why you had a revised agenda bill this evening. I also received, it was a busy week, I also received correspondence from one and then what became two residents along Rainier View Road. So I had somebody email me on Wednesday or Thursday last week, and then again a different person, I believe it was last night, expressing concern about speeding along Rainier View Road and also expressing disappointment that 191st is not was vacated and the extension hasn't been made since that vacation occurred some time ago. So anyway, I just wanted to make you aware of that. Staff and I are working on the issue of traffic on that road as far as speeding. We're also going to be talking, staff and I will be talking about doing some outreach to the community there about what we're doing with 191st / the Frontage Road 7. Music in the Park starts this Friday, so I'd encourage everybody to be out there, bring a jacket. Didn't have to say that last year. I am beginning to do what we're calling Coffee with the Mayor on Saturday about twice a month. The first one I'm doing is at the Dashing Dutchman on Saturday. Feel free to come down and have a cup of coffee with me. I'll be there at 8 o'clock. I don't know if anybody will be there, but I'm hoping that some folks will catch on and want to come and just kind of bend my ear because they can't make it on a Thursday afternoon or other times that I'm available. So again, that'll be the this week. That'll be at the Dashing Dutchman on Saturday, and I'm going to be rotating that location. I do need to know if there's anybody that's interested in doing the Snohomish County Cities meeting on July 21st. We currently have myself and Councilmember Scarborough attending. Is there anybody else that's going to be able to attend on July 21st at Snohomish County Cities? This will be at the Hilton Garden in Bothell. Okay, if you decide that you're able to attend, please email Liz. Lastly, and certainly not least importantly, Councilmember Hanford said it so eloquently, and I'm just going to simply say thank you, Chief, and please share my gratitude to our officers for the work that they do. Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and move on to Brad, and Brad's going to be talking to us about the intersection of Blueberry and Kelsey.
So, this is Kelsey Street, this is Blueberry Lane. They had some drawings in their packet?
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
So, basically, the current plot right now is basically to put a double pork chop in here, which would do some C-curvy along here, which will allow people to make a right turn in and a right turn out. Also put some C-curvy along here from the driveway into State Rivers up to the railroad tracks to prevent people from making left turns. That would cost about $5,000 to $6,000 to do that. That would basically eliminate the backup because people wouldn't have to wait in line for people either to make a left turn that way or make a left turn that way. They just come up and make a right turn in, these people go this, and everybody else will just go straight down. Kelsey Street. You also talked about something that was up a while ago. A few years ago, and Councilmember Hanford mentioned that last time we talked about this about 3 weeks ago, is to make it a one-way coming down here. This would be one-way this way around like that, and then Kelsey Street would be made two-way. It sort of accomplishes the same thing, although it makes it a little bit more convenient for people up here if they want to go down that way. They have to go all the way around the block. Things to consider when we do this is it will probably increase the amount of traffic on this street for people who would rather want to make a left turn here, they'd have to come around here, or the people who are doing the cut through right now coming up 179th and then this way up to US 2 by going down 522, they have to get back, stay on 522 and get on the highway 2 using the flyover. So there are some consequences. That wouldn't be a problem for residents, but it may increase traffic for the residents along King Street and West Columbia. Any questions?
Councilmember Gamble.
I love the first option. I think that's... I think that's long overdue. You're losing that left, a hand turn out of there. I get that, but there's still, you can still access it. You know, going the way that actually you just zoomed out to. If you're coming down that way, you just go down there.
Right. Or you stay on, and you go up to 179. Depending on where you're going.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it mitigates the traffic problem that is there and the backups that occur, and you do it for $5,000 to $6,000. It's no good.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Yeah, and if we did that first option, it doesn't stop us from later on, there's something else that happens. I mean, we're just basically eliminating the term.
It's not anything big.
You can see how much it solves it with people not being able to turn. you know, made their left, I guess, right?
Yeah.
But we might get a lot of public comment. I don't know, but that's,
and it just depends on how creative they are, because right now they, yeah, you know, they do, you know, get in the wrong lane and drive up this way and get in, and it'll make it harder for them to do that. So, you know, whether or not that has some consequences, if somebody gets up at the end and they, there's nowhere for them to go because the curb's in the way. So
they make a left turn to Kelsey, and if traffic's backed up, cross the railroad tracks up the highway too,
they drive up that way.
Left lane, and then get into the left turn on you. Mm-hmm.
And that's what putting the C curb here will keep the people from going here. They won't be able to get over there to do that. Yeah. It'll be C curb from the railroad tracks all the way down to the curb.
Yeah. Agreed that looking at that, the minimal budgetary or investment to see what the impact would be. Yeah.
When would you do that, right?
It'd probably be late summer.
So, Councilor Cutterback, is that something that you're interested in doing then? I'm just trying to get a...
Yeah, I'm interested in doing that. I'm just trying to do it before school starts.
Yeah, definitely. After school district.
Give enough time in there,
yeah,
to... Because that's when it can get backed up a lot, when school's mm-hmm. getting out, you know, down. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Councilor Hanford.
Thank you. Fred, so how many lanes cross the railroad tracks?
Officially one. You know, sometimes if people, since there's no stripes across the railroad tracks here, you know, some people who can be a little interested, you know, excited, they kind of push the limit on whether or not there's two lanes there or not. So, but officially there's one. There's two southbound and one northbound.
Okay, two southbound.
Yeah, the through southbound and then the right turn onto Missouri.
And there's no way to expand that?
No. Because what we'd have to do is put in a new crossing, which is $500,000 off the bat. And then you also have to buy some right-of-way here. Did they get that picture in the packet? The picture, basically you have to buy some right-of-way from state workers and from the right aid.
Okay.
They let you put it in. You have to ask.
Yeah, they also have to ask again. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, okay.
We're talking about just doing the sidewalks at 179th and Front Boulevard with BNSF, and we've been talking to them about a year and haven't got a decision yet or whether they'll let us to do that or not.
Okay. And then can you go down to show how far that barrier would be?
It would go to right there to allow state worker trucks to come back down and still get back into their yard. So there's a driveway in the state worker right there.
Okay. And then
north, it would go to just south of the railroad right away, because we can't put things in there right away.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in favor of starting with this. I mean, let's try it and see what happens, and then, you know, if this doesn't fix the issue, then we can, you know, make some changes after that. But I'm in favor of that.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I guess all I would say, if we go north a little bit, you can see the last time we did something very similar. I don't know if it's showing on Google Earth yet or not, but that strip...
No, it's got the old stuff.
So that's the old stuff. That's
yeah.
Good. So right now, everybody, if you want to point it out with your laser
finger. Right there, and
right there. Yes. Mm-hmm. So if you guys remember, before we put that in, that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Back up, and since we put that in, I mean, obviously there was a little bit of complaints, you know, out of the get, but the flow of traffic there has been just much better. So
yeah.
I think, you know, inaction is not the course. Let's try something, and it makes sense. Let's do it.
And then just as we're in this general vicinity, there's one other thing, is the other issue that happens sometimes is the left turns either into or right turns ever left turns out of, or actually there's left turns out of Rite Aid.
Mm-hmm.
It's also been diagonal into Denny's, and that was one of the things that was done when we did the EIS for North Kelsey, talked about closing that off by doing basically the same thing we did here with the Seeker. Mm-hmm. So that's something else that might come up along the line, too.
Okay.
All right.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Brad, the land that's there to the left of Kelsey, I guess Pete's party pit, that
mm-hmm.
right there, that's currently being developed right now, isn't it?
Yes, this property here. Where are they in the process?
Environmental review and site plan review.
Okay.
So do we know if there's access into that property once it's developed, that's coming off of Kelsey, kind of like where the road
is? Where the driveway is now?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not part of that property, is it? That separate piece? Is it basically from here over this currently interview?
I think the west gate is where you keep going to the left.
West?
Right around in there.
Okay. But how far east does it go? Does it go all the way to Kelsey or does it stop?
I think it stops, but I don't know.
Okay.
Where.
Yeah. Because there was one property line there, right. Out there-ish. Yeah. And that's one of the things we can do, though, in the environmental review, if this property is involved, or when that does, is say there's no access to that way, or make it right in, or something like that, just to keep that from happening again.
Okay, yeah, that's going to be good.
They have enough room along Blueberry itself to get access to the property.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. One more question. So what will happen to this area, right? This lane right here?
That depends on how much money the council would like to spend and how much staff time the Parks Department has. Because basically it would just be the Seeker, you know, do that little area right there to direct traffic, and then it would either be left open or we'll stripe it out, you know, processing, or if the council wants to sometime in the future put a median in there, you know, with flowers and plants like on Main Street. So it's up to either to be available to do either one.
Okay. Yeah, anybody else? Mr. Fowler, a couple questions. So I do see the backups. So we have a couple things that we've noticed are happening as a result of we have people that are trying to bypass the fact that they're stuck northbound on Kelsey, and so they're hopping in the southbound lanes and driving in the southbound lanes to turn left on Blueberry. So that's one problem that the C curve would take care of. The other one is that we're getting people backed up westbound on Blueberry to turn left or go north
eastbound.
On to Kelsey.
No, eastbound.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
let's
eastbound.
Go with eastbound.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. They are eastbound on Blueberry, wanting to go northbound on Kelsey.
Correct.
And so they're backing up there, and from time to time they're pulling in to go northbound, but they're hanging out into the southbound lanes on Kelsey.
All right. Or they just decided that since I'm making a left turn at Highway 2, I'll just drive down the southbound lanes because there's room in the left turn pocket on North Kelsey.
Yep.
Yeah, so basically, these people turn and drive down that way and get into the left turn pocket because they can see up there, they can fit, and there's no cars coming south, so they just drive up the wrong side of the road.
Okay, and so the solution that we're considering right now is to put in a pork chop to make it so that it would be right in, right out only.
Right, pork chop there, and then also the pork chop and a median, a very narrow median down the yellow line, so you can't make a left turn, or drive out around somebody and drive it the wrong way to make it to the left turn line.
Okay. So one of the things that I'm observing here is that we would be making these changes that would go into effect all the time for the PM peak hour commute. So 2 a.m. in the morning, okay, I'm not driving at 2 a.m. in the morning, but I'm going to be ridiculous. I'll go with 9 a.m. in the morning. I'm leaving the Frylands. I'm going down Blueberry to turn left to go up to Fred Meyer. So, you know, 8 a.m., 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning, I'm not going to be able to make that left turn even though it's not a traffic issue.
Correct.
Okay. So if the issue is with people getting in the wrong direction traffic rather than putting the pork chop, would we be able to put a C curve down, you know, down the yellow line, but have a break where people can turn left to get in the northbound traffic? And again, my thought here is that if we're doing all of this work for just a 2-hour window of time, Monday through Friday in the afternoon, is there another way to approach it so that people can still turn left there when it's completely safe?
Yes, but it depends on how much illumination do you want to limit left turns at other times. Because you can just put a sign up that says no left turn, you know, 3 to 6. Mm-hmm. But whether or not...
And you can reinforce that by putting in C-curb to make it so people don't get in the southbound lanes going northbound.
Right. Or they have to go. They have to get into the southbound lanes and go farther north because there's a C-curb there.
Which arguably could happen with a pork chop in the middle. The pork chop's not going to go in the middle. So that's going to happen regardless.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one observation, is that the solution that's being talked about right now, as I'm understanding it, would be a solution for a 2 to 3 hour window of time, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit more Monday through Friday, PM peak hour. And so that's one observation. The other question that I have is, where are all the folks coming from? People know that it's difficult to turn left there during that time of the day. I'm trying to, you know, where I live in town, I wouldn't be using this connection because I know it's a bad place to turn left. I wouldn't be going that direction during that time of the day. Are the folks that travel that way based on your traffic studies, are they coming from Blueberry or are they coming from the Frylands? Or
basically, it appears that they're getting off of 522 and coming up Main Street to 179th, the Blueberry, to go east.
Okay, so they're getting off the 522 at the roundabout over by the
dealership. Yeah, they go up Frylands Boulevard and down 154, either way.
So they're not necessarily the people that live in the Frylands.
Or Blueberry, yeah.
Okay. All right. So if this is something that we're going to do, I'd like there to be notice to... I think it would be wise to have notice to the businesses, to Denny and Rite Aid, that they're aware of it ahead of time. To the other business, the roofing company right there. Are there any other parties that we could put a sign there that says traffic revision coming.
Right.
At least giving people notice of the fact that we're doing it. But yeah, those are my thoughts. I think I'd like to hear a little bit more about having an option that doesn't make it so you can't turn left the rest of the time, which is a majority of the time. But anyway, it sounds as if council's in favor of putting in the pork chop. And I see that I've generated a couple other lights. So, Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I just want to clarify a slight error that you made there, Pat.
Okay, maybe I misunderstood.
My idea was that Kelsey would continue as a one-way in both lanes, not both ways here and there.
Okay.
So that both lanes can go across. Because that seems to be such a huge backup.
Mm-hmm.
And that the backup is hardly ever to come this way. And so you have one lane that only goes down Blueberry. And that's where it becomes a one-way. So just wanted to clarify. That was my idea. Thanks.
So you make Kelsey a one-way road with both lanes, so two lanes going down?
Correct.
Okay.
From about the junior high. Yeah.
Or from West London.
Two lanes to Blueberry.
From where the other one-way comes from.
Yeah.
On Columbia. Right? That's Columbia.
That's Columbia right there at
the bottom. So basically you make it a big giant run, but
yep.
All the way around there.
Yeah, from Columbia.
So everybody who comes out of Hill Street would have to turn right to go north.
Correct.
Everybody came out of
Elizabeth, then Phillips. Yeah. Elizabeth Street would have to go up. That's
yep.
And then North Street would have to go left.
Yeah.
Right.
But there'd be two lanes, so...
Two lanes, right.
That, I mean, traffic's going to flow, and everybody's going to be happy.
Until the train comes, they're all stuck there anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything further, Councilmember Hanford? All right. Councilmember Cutterback.
Gamble. Did you have your button?
No. He just pushed it.
Oh. I was just going to say that. Up on Blueberry, I would love it to be just a two-hour window. It's hit or miss. I drive that way all the time. And you can never tell when there's traffic. It can be in the middle of the day. It can be when school's out. It can be at 7, you know, 6 o'clock at night. It's weird. It's hard to pin that down. So I don't think it's just for a two-hour window in, like, prime time. And then I would assume, and people are coming for me, I'm coming from the Frylands or from work or from the middle school, and it's the way to avoid Highway 2 and to cut over. So I think there's a lot of traffic on there that's local people just trying to get from one end of town to the other. I would assume we would do notice and all that stuff. And what's the appropriate amount of time that you do notice? Putting that Dave or?
No, Chris.
Chris.
Oh, she's our notice?
Yeah. Newspaper.
So we don't get anything out, like, to, as the mayor was saying?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it would cost the same amount as doing the project to mail something to everybody in the city tomorrow.
Well, so, the same thing we would put in the water bill, like, hey, we'll put these up or something, something like that. A lot of locals, I think, drive that way and are frustrated with that intersection, has been told many, many times. So I don't know, that's a good point of how much notice are we giving, because all of a sudden it appearing there, people, that raises their frustration.
No, the real way to do it is you put a sign in that says, as of September 1st, you can't make a left turn here.
Some type of notice to people so that they're prepared for it, because that might limit the frustration versus, here you go, and why wasn't I told about this? So I think that is an important point. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen?
I'm learning that pork chop is a technical term.
It is a technical term.
Not just dinner.
So, I'm curious, the pork chop concept that would require drivers coming south on Kelsey to turn right, and then Blueberry to turn right on the Kelsey.
It only requires people in the right turn lane southbound to turn right. Not everybody.
There's two. Okay, never mind that. Okay.
Unless we do the one way. The one way thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hamburger roll.
Stuffed pork chop?
No. Yes, stuffed pork chop.
Costco. Contact that.
It's a Costco.
So with the pork chop, then southbound Kelsey would still be able to come south all the way to Hill Street.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I like that.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was going to bring up, Patsy, is that it's not just a two-hour ordeal that we're looking at. It is local. I can't tell you how many times, and I always forget. Then you get there and you're crap. And you're stuck in it. And because what happens is, you're absolutely right, that those 2 hours, that's a consistent.
Yes.
But anytime a double train goes through, okay, now the light tries to compensate for it, but then it gets backed up, and then for the time that it tries to catch up, then you have the issue again. So, and like you said, it could be any sort of event. It could be the tournament stuff we're talking about, or parks department, or whatever the case may be. But it's weird. It happens more than just that 2 hours. You're absolutely right that there are times of the day that you could make a left, no problem. But there is no way that, I mean, they're just not going to adhere. They're driving down the wrong lane right now. So if we put a sign up that says no left-hand turn between such and such and such and such. In fact, we could stick a camera down on Main Street and see how often people would adhere to the no left-hand turn.
A no left-hand turn camera.
Yeah. They don't right now, so I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah.
All right, Councilmember Gamble, you stood up before. Councilmember Davis, I haven't heard from you on this. You live in the Frylands area. What are your thoughts?
I like the original thing. I agree with what was just said. It is all the time. I don't ever go that way anymore because of that. There are certain times of the day I wouldn't go near it.
Second.
But almost any other time of the day I've gone there, and it's hit and miss. And you never can predict it. And I've spent a lot of time sitting there, so I just don't ever go that way anymore. So
question for you all, and this is a substantial change to our traffic pattern. So I'd like to make certain that if this is council's direction, that we get the word out, give warning. I think it would be good to get some, have an opportunity for some feedback from folks before we get, before we start actually installing something out there. Yes, Brad.
We've done this similar in the past. We actually, I forget what we did. It was on Madison and Howell or something like that. We did a temporary, put orange barrels out there, you know, and said, okay, what do you think? And let people come in and talk, you know, that was there for a month, and then said, okay. In that case, it was, no, don't do it, but, you know, get the feedback and then say, yes, we'll put the permit and stuff in, or we won't continue doing that.
Cool. Okay. And so the goal would be here that whatever traffic control device that is installed, that we want to do that before school starts.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You still need to talk to the school district about it and make sure you understand how it's going to modify routes. Is this going to impact community transit?
No.
Community transit doesn't use Kelsey?
Community transit uses Kelsey, but they go south. On Kelsey.
They go south on Kelsey.
Yes, they don't turn on Blueberry. They go south on Kelsey and north on Kelsey. But they don't make a left turn at that intersection.
It would help them.
Yeah.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble.
Brad, your recommendation, pork chop, is that?
Yeah, a butterfly pork chop, actually.
Butterfly pork.
Okay, because it plucks over this whole place.
Yeah. Cheap. I'm interested in hearing.
I'm with Brad.
Pork chop.
Pork chop.
Absolutely.
Yep, that's right. There.
Okay, Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. I value public input, but I honestly can't think of anyone except maybe the couple people that live right nearby there that are going to object to any kind of restricting of the turns. So I'd hate to drag this on for months.
No? Okay. All right. So can I have a motion to direct mayor and staff to have a pork chop installed at Blueberry? Councilmember Hanford?
I'll move to direct mayor and staff to have a butterfly pork chop.
A butterfly pork chop.
Installed. Corner of Kelsey and Blueberry.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Hanford and a second from Councilmember Gamble to direct the mayor and staff to install a butterfly pork chop at the intersection of Blueberry and North Kelsey. Discussion on the motion. Councilmember Cutterback.
I'm going to vote yes for it because I do agree that that's the way to go, but I do agree with the mayor that notice, because that can limit frustration, and to get notice out ahead of time so people are aware. So I do think, I just want to state that on the record that that's important. So
definitely.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Definitely.
Councilmember Scarborough.
So we decided we're not doing any sort of time limitations. Just put in the form.
Correct. Yeah. It would be effective 24/7.
Okay.
And
Brad's got his light on.
Yeah.
Hey, Brad. Question. Does it include putting the C curb along the yellow line?
Yes, I'm understanding that the C curb is part of it. I don't think there's any disagreement about the C curb being installed. Is there objection to me understanding that the C curb is part of that? No, I don't think there's any objection to that. Okay, so as part of us notifying the public, I'm going to ask staff, and we'll take a vote after this, I'm going to ask staff to put together a diagram as to what it's going to look like. We'll put it out on the city's Facebook page. We'll try to have it done in time so that it can make publishing, and we'll wait at least 2 weeks before it gets installed. It's probably going to take that long to have you contact the school district, double check with community transit, the fire district, and order materials and everything. But I think that's it. Councilmember Hanford?
Just to clarify, we're extending across the track?
No, not at the moment.
You're talking about doing that in the future?
Yeah, that's just starting at the south there too, right? Okay. Just at the south side of the tracks.
Okay.
Okay, which would mean we don't need to notify Rite Aid and Dennis.
Correct.
Right now.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, so we have a motion on the table. I've already repeated the motion. I'm going to go ahead and call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. All right, thank you very much. Brad, do you have anything else?
Yep. That's it for me.
Okay, let's go back to the agenda. Mr. Brazel.
Just a real quick heads up, if you didn't look at it, it was the finance report. It's a real testament to the work the staff does every year doing the estimates. As you look, he's a junior port, so he should be about 50%, and all our marks are right at that point. So great job, staff, for putting those estimates together. And we have the draft agenda for July 19th, 2016. We have the consent agenda. Under unfinished business, we'll be talking about downtown decorative lighting again. Just a quick update as to if we receive any more donations. We've got final action, impact fee deferral system, and council member reports. Any additions or deletions?
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. The P4 committee report should come from Chairperson Davis.
Okay.
Instead of me.
Got it.
Reminder, I will not be here next week.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford.
Just a reminder, I'll be going on a missions trip to Mexico with three of my teenage daughters.
Cool.
So I will not, I will be absent for a little while.
Okay. If you could get those dates to Liz, I'd appreciate it.
She has them.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
They're on there.
Oh, perfect. Okay. All right. Councilmember Gamble?
So I plan on being here next Tuesday, but I do have a meeting downtown that goes into the... I just wanted to let you... I might be a little bit late, but I should be able to make it 7, barring traffic.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Sounds good. Gene?
Just a question for City Clerk. Did we cancel August 2nd, or do we need a motion on that? I can't remember.
We have not officially canceled August 2nd, but it is traditional to cancel that because it's a national night.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford, I think you were first.
I move to cancel the business meeting for August 2nd due to the National Night Out Against Crime and support of that.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Gamble to cancel the August 2nd, 2016 meeting for the National Night Out Against Crime event. And we will notice the fact we could have a possible quorum there, even though there will be 5,000 people there. any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Okay, all opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Okay, anything further, Gene?
No.
Okay, I have one requested addition to the extended agenda. I'll work with staff as to when to put this on the agenda, but I don't want to just surprise council with it. And if you disagree with what I'd like to put on the agenda, feel free to share and we can talk about it. But I'd like to place on the agenda, probably sometime in August, a resolution to declare the city bird the Vox Swift. The reason for that is we have a very unique colony of swifts that go into our chimney every year. We have the statue that's going in the downtown, and I'd like to target sometime in August, working with the Chamber of Commerce and maybe the school district and the Kolchak Audubon Society, so that council can adopt the resolution sometime in August, early September, in time for Swift Night Out. So, does anybody have concern about that? Councilmember Rasmussen?
No concern about that, but I'm just curious if that would be about the timing of the sculpture being put in place as well.
The sculpture will be toward November. It'll be toward Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So I was asked the same question earlier today. The question is, do we wait for the sculpture, or do we target doing this as school starting just before Swift Night Out?
Nope.
And it seemed to make sense to do it as school starting and Swift Night Out, and then the sculpture just simply expresses that in another way.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. All right. That's all I had. I will go ahead and we'll put that on the extended agenda sometime in August, and we'll work with our partners. Do you have anything further, Gene? All right, Councilmember Hanford.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, I have a first to adjourn from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion to adjourn? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passed. Abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. We're adjourned.
Yeah.